and welcome to Parley, the Hindu's weekly discussion podcast. I'm Prashant Perumal, your host for today. Since the nationwide lockdown announced by the center in March last year, the Indian economy has faced its worst contraction in its history. However, the Indian stock indices, the Sensex and the Nifty, almost doubled in price. When you look at it from the low that was hit in April 2020. So after this huge bull run, many analysts and even the Reserve Bank of India warned that stocks may be in a bubble. So to discuss this and the general state of markets, today we have with us two guests, Mr. Anand Srinivasan, who's a well-known value investor and the author of Ordinary Stocks, Extraordinary Profits. We also have with us Mr. Alok Jain, who's a SEBI-registered investment advisor, and a momentum investor at weekendinvesting.com. So welcome to both of you guests. Mr. Anand, we'll start with you. So can you like offer your view on the current market and also kind of shed light on the whole theme of the disparity that we see or the divergence that we see between the stock market and the economy? So what exactly do the investors believe and what exactly makes economists completely gloomy?
Let me give you this short take. The markets are going on liquidity. Basically, the world is printing money. All central banks are printing money. Even our central bank is printing money like there is no tomorrow. This money has to find a way to go somewhere. So what you are having originally was an asset price inflation. The price of gold went up dramatically. The price of crypto assets went up dramatically. And the price of stocks went up dramatically. Even prices of collectibles also have increased. While we may look at the Indian market as in isolation, we have to understand that we are not the only market that is going up. All equity markets are going up. And when you say year-to-day comparison, India is not in the top five countries whose exchange has done well.
Sorry, sir, what top five of what?
Top five of the Indian, of the world stock market performances, India will not be there in the top five. So basically what has happened is there has been a huge liquidity rally and that kind of liquidity has seeped into the market. And if somebody has read Benjamin Graham's Intelligent Investor, the market, Mr. Market has taken leave of his senses. He is in a partying mode. There is so much money chasing very few stocks which have high quality. When I say high quality, people where you have stocks of unteachable integrity, you can trust their balance sheets, you know what you are getting, it's not a black box. Those kind of stocks have done extremely well. Nearly 45% of the index is controlled by five stocks, right? It may be give or take few percentage points. The HDFC twins are at 10.7 and about 8.29. Reliance is controlled. Has about 9.5, INFI at 6.89, ICICI at 5.88, TCS at 5.28. Primarily, this adds up to 42 to 43% of the market. The balance 45 stocks contribute very less. There are some stocks which are extremely expensive, like Nestle and Hindustan Unilever, but have not found in the top 5. Because they're floating, the amount of shares that float in the market are relatively very little. So the markets are indeed highly overvalued. The Nifty is trading at 28 times its earnings, 29 times its earnings. Price to book is 4.23. And this Nifty EPS is 559. This is primarily because 20% you can attribute to the gift check that Mrs. Sitaraman gave these companies about 19 months back. All these companies have now moved to the 23 to 25% tax bracket. So if you look at it, about 100 rupees of this 559 is a clean tax break. But the reality of India is completely different. Like TN9 and the Venerable TN9 said, India and the rest of the world are going through a K-shaped recovery. The rich and the large companies get larger and bigger. They are getting a larger source of their resources. The most famous example I'll give you is of Tata Steel.
Just to interrupt you, do you see like the divergence even within the entire slope? So a few stocks are actually rallying and the rest of the entire... Okay, so do you think that it's just the few stocks that are in a rally? I mean, it's just these, let's say, the top 10 that are in a bubble? Or do you see are the other stocks fairly valued or undervalued?
No, I think the top 20... See, there will be about 25 to 40 stocks. Some of them in the indices, something like Britannia, which is off the index. So about 40 to 50 stocks are in a bubble territory. The balance are normally valued. The mid-cap and the small-cap has valued in the last 3-4 months. But that, I think, is a temporary liquidity phenomenon. But just to say this point on Tata Steel, see the dramatic change in corporate fortunes. The company was at 250 rupees. Its total debt was lower than the market cap of Tata Steel was lower than the total debt. 1 year of price increases in steel, primarily driven by the kind of money liquidity sloshing around, has meant Tata Steel has cut 20,000 crores in debt and has jumped to 1,000 crores and become a very healthy company. So this is why I'm giving an example of a K-shaped recovery, where Tatas have benefited from rising steel prices, very low borrowing costs, and the mistake of Corus in 2008 has been the sins of Corus have been washed away by a combination of high liquidity, higher steel prices, and also this lower corporate taxes. So this is what is driving the index.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Let me move on to Mr. Alok. Mr. Alok, like we know you as a completely pure momentum investor. So when you look at the current valuations compared to the economic gloom, do these valuations or the prices really even worry you, or do they even matter to you at the moment?
So hi, thanks Prashant for having me. So we really don't look at valuations primarily because our focus is also on price trends and how the liquidity is impacting the price trends. We follow the principle of BBC principle, which is Bhav Bhagwan Che, and we basically believe that the price incorporates all the information that is required to be incorporated and presented by the stock. However, Mr. Anand has very rightly said that it's a liquidity-driven rally. The only sort of difference that I would like to present here is that it is always a liquidity-driven rally, and it is never different from that. We tend to equate the real economy with the, the stock markets at all times, but they hardly ever meet. There are very few meeting points that ever come around where you can actually say, the market is behaving as per the economy or the economy is behaving as per the markets. That is usually never the case. And, that is the sole reason why 90% of all economists and all, analysts in the market are not able to call what's going to happen next. The classic example in the last 15 months has been, the March 2020 fall, and the resulting forecasts that came out were that of gloom and doom. But things have turned now, and in the last 9 months or even 12 months, I've been hearing that the market should top out. Market has gone up a lot, so there is no real correlation left. The historical the valuation matrix that existed, all the models, even they are getting broken because the whole money supply equation is changing. So if Japan can trade at 34 times earnings, and US can trade at 28 times earnings, and China is trading at 19 times earnings, so Nifty could be 40 or 30 or 20, you take your pick, and you can justify it there. So Nifty was before 31st March at 40 times earnings. They changed the way the valuations are done from standalone to consolidated, and it dropped immediately by 20%. Analysts who were looking at 1 year forward earnings so far in the last 10 years have suddenly started to look at their Excel sheets to 2 years or 3 years forward earnings. So all this earnings valuation / analysis is largely dependent upon the price, and price is the leading parameter based on which a lot of times all this analysis is built around that. You will always notice that when the markets are going up, the forward valuations, the forward analysis is always upward looking. You will never hear any report even today saying that, you know, things are overvalued, get out of the market, buy it at a lower. Nobody will say that. But, you know, so that's how the entire system is built, that people need to sell whatever they are selling, and they need to keep the story going. But coming back to the liquidity point of view, the Fed has pumped about 5 trillion, so and so have other central bankers. I'm sure India is pumping a lot of money too. So there seems to be no end to it right now. And, you know, we are like a, you know, patient on the emergency room, and you're getting steroids, and you now need to be weaned off those steroids, but that process has not even started. You know, so how you will react once the steroids start to come off, and how you will be able to walk again and then run again, it's a very, very long process. So I think from that perspective, you know, years and years may take to normalize, if at all that's possible. And, you know, we are sitting at very, very vulnerable situations across various markets, where all kinds of euphoria and, you know, bubbles are forming. So there is no real essential sort of model that you can rely upon for investing anymore, as far as I'm concerned. And the better way to now look at markets is of, you know, relativity. So you can possibly, you know, argue that one company is better than the other because of, you know, their relative performance or their relative ability to generate margins. But on an absolute basis, you really can't value any stock or a market in this kind of, you know, territory where, you know, it's endless money flowing around. So yes, I mean, there are bubbles in the market, and one should ride the trend till it lasts, and not really, you know, sit out of the market, because market returns are always lumpy. You'll get one such fantastic year and then, you know, two such dull years or three dull years. So if you miss out the large big year, you've actually missed out the entire cycle.
All right. Interesting. Yeah. If to pick up from like one of your points, and we can move that to Mr. Anand. Mr. Anand, like Alok talks about how exactly like, earnings don't matter, or fundamentals don't matter anymore. It's all just a price game. How do you respond to that?
Since he said everything is liquidity, I will pick out two cases from history. Let's talk about the Nikkei, since he's talked about the Japan. In 1989, when most people were not born who are trading today. In 1989, the Nikkei peaked out at 40,000. Now, 31 years later, the Nikkei is not anywhere near 40,000 yet. That's a bubble. That is, it has taken 32 years and it is still 30% of the peak. The Dow Jones in 1929 crashed from 800 to double digits. And it took 25 years, 1954, before the world high was crossed. So, like we correctly pointed out, we are in steroids. We don't know what is happening. Shaktikanta Das has printed 3.5 lakh crores. Come this September, he would have printed 3.5 lakh crores this year. He would have printed about 7 lakh crores last year. So, all this party has to come to an end at some time. We don't know when, like he correctly points out when. But the early warning signs are there, in the sense that for the first time in many years, American inflation is running at 4%. Indian inflation has been consistently higher than what the RBI has projected 10 out of the last 12 months. So basically, all this party will come to an end when people feel the pinch of inflation. Right now, there is a very word, English word that is being bandied about, saying this inflation is transitional. But 1 year of inflation is not transitionary. But we have to wait and watch. Because as inflation begins to bite, that is when politicians will remove the punch bowl. So till inflation, as of now, I don't see this happening till early 2022. Because Jerome Powell will not want to spoil the party now, because his renomination is due. So he would like to have one more term as the governor or the chief of the Federal Reserve. So I don't think we are going to see the end of the party before 2022, which may come in the end of 2022 or 2023. Like you correctly pointed out, it depends on how much money flows where. I'll give you an example. A person known to me, called me from America, he's a TCS employee, low-level employee, making $5,000 a month. Bank of America is offering him a $30,000 interest-free loan for 2 years with a processing fee of 2%. So basically 1% per year interest if we can settle the debt in 2 years. People are going to are taking that money and putting it through the Robinhood app into the markets. So this kind of partying has to end at some time. And I have spent, this was my 35th year in the market. I have done fairly well for myself. Normally, I don't believe in getting in and going over the market. I might have not bought much in the last 14 months. That is from May of last year or June of last year. I wouldn't have bought much, but nor would I have sold my positions. My positions run along. It doesn't matter to me whether the index goes up or goes down. The businesses I've owned for the last 25 years are good businesses. They will ride through this cycle. So, he is right. You cannot find a value. You cannot make a value judgment at this point of time. But what you can do is find pockets of value. Keep buying small amounts of stock, which you can afford to lose, say about 5,000 rupees a month or 4,000 rupees a month, whatever you can afford, and keep going. But the end, like I quote said, Caramel, the end will come. Only we don't know when it will come. And like John Templeton said, now the most famous investor said, the famous thing is this time is different. So when you start hearing this saying, this bull market is different from previous bull markets, then we know the beginning of the end has come. People have not told me that this market is different.
I actually want to begin from here, like pick up from here. This give you another question to start. Like for the at least since 2008, a lot of people have been saying, talking about a bubble forming because of money printing by the Fed and other central banks. And if an investor was going to listen to them, he'll probably be sitting out of the market all this time, which is like 12 or 13 years. Yeah, how would you approach this from an investing viewpoint? Yeah,
see, I have been in this market since 1985. So, my first market was in position was in 1985. Now, this is my 35th year in the market. So, this is one of the many bubbles I've seen. I've seen Harshad Mehta, I've seen Ketan Parekh, I've seen the 2000 bubble, I've seen 2008. I'm one of those guys who bought Satyam at 2 rupees or 8 rupees at the lowest point. I bought Tata Consulting Services at 60 rupees. So, those days will come. Like, these are extremes, those are extremes. So people like me, we don't sell out on these bull markets because when we don't need the money, we don't sell. But we generally stay out, wait for the right time. That's the old school. We wait for the right time to buy.
Okay, got it. So you basically wait for the crisis to give you some good opportunities to load up on good stuff. Got it.
I'm not saying the crisis. The market will return to normality. Crisis means the index should be at less than 12 times earnings. That is very rare.
So even otherwise, you think you can find individual opportunities that can help you an investor?
Yeah. I can rattle off stocks right away.
Okay, got it. Okay, I have a question for Mr. Alok. Alok, like, how do you look? I think you look at charts and the momentum. How do you look at the current market? Like, I feel like over the last year, there's been a huge uptrend, and this year it's kind of flattened out. I guess it's really a technical view of the market.
From our perspective, nothing much has changed. The way we work is that we have long-term models which measure momentum and then allocate across stocks. So far we have not seen our models go to cash because gradually as the market plateaus or starts to go down, our models tend to go into cash gradually, and that has not yet started. So there is no concern right now about the the effectiveness of the uptrend so far. Yes, there are, for the last month or so, the markets have kind of stagnated. But there is enough opportunity and activity within the mid-cap and the small-cap space that is going on. From that perspective, nothing really has changed in the last month or two. And the same trend that has continued from the past is continuing. At some point, of course, I do believe that, you know, more because of, you know, people having a fear of height, there may be a episode of some profit booking. But that would be a very sort of a normal reaction to this kind of a run. And the whole, you know, fear actually is that just like Sir had mentioned about Japan, any market could become, you know, the next Japan. US could become the next Japan. And if that happens, there is no, because Nikkei went up like 4x in 2 or 3 years leading to the 1990 40,000 top. And if S&P were to do that, or if tomorrow Nifty were to do that, you could be looking at, you know, a huge amount of time that the market will need to digest that over the next, you know, 5 years, 10 years or whatever time it may take. Just like we've seen in the real estate market, like the run that we saw from 2004 to 2011, it basically outran itself by almost a decade or a decade and a half. So the gains that were originally going to come over two cycles, the real estate market absorbed it in one cycle itself. And then now we have seen in the last, you know, 10 odd years, the market has been kind of absorbing those returns and letting inflation catch up, you know, so that the valuations can catch up to the actual purchasing power of the people. So, I mean, it is not out of the, you know, the idea is probably there that in case this liquidity keeps gushing through, and if Powell is going to remain there till 2022 mid, then and post that also, I'm not sure how this tap can be turned off without really, you know, causing a bloodshed in the markets and in the economies there, because everybody's getting used to this. So so once this keeps going on for the next 6, 8, 9 months, we could be at, you know, 18,000 or wherever we could be on the Nifty, and the resulting pain could be deeper and longer. So we need to be ready with, you know, how we're going to exit the market. A lot of people who are coming in, especially now, you've seen like 4-5 crore new accounts, new DMAT accounts opening up, and a lot of people jumping in with lump sum monies at this stage, could well be sitting at the top. You know, if the market were to roll off from here, they could probably not see these levels for next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Who knows? So, so the markets are, you know, going to be a challenge. But what what you can do to overcome this challenge is to have a proper strategy that will help you ride this wave.
So you talked about like going into cash. Have your models, like your momentum models, ever recommended going into cash in the past? I mean, in historic periods or in particular periods?
Yes. So in February and March 2020, we virtually went to 90-95% cash. So what happens is, as the market starts to come off, the momentum obviously has gone away from those stocks, and the models basically recommend you to move out of those stocks and into cash. And as soon as the market starts to pick up again, like it did in April 2020, the strongest stocks that first moved up were the ones picked up by the model. So it's like a, you know, a selection of the fittest. So you basically survive by lowering your drawdown. The biggest, you know, sort of underperformance reason for many portfolios is because when the market comes down, your portfolio comes down along with it. And then, you know, a portfolio of 100 coming down to 50 requires a 100% gain to go back to 100. So you need to be able to reduce the drawdown in the portfolio so that, let's say, you were able to, you know, reduce it to 80. So 100 to 80 is where you got out. And then when the next up move comes, you are building from 80. You're not building from 50. And hence, you are able to beat the index by reducing the depth of the hole in which you are falling and, you know, building on that on the next time.
Just to clarify, you talked about February of 2020 when you were 95% cash. Like, what exactly made you, like, what was the market made you get in that cash level? Were stocks flattening or were they like actually going down?
So actually going down. So February end or March first week was the first sort of big lot of cash that we raised. And then by March second week, we were fully in cash. And then I think the market bottomed end of March. And then the April move started up. And by end of April or first couple of weeks of May, we were, I think, fully allocated by then. So we did miss you know, the initial move, because that's what momentum misses when the momentum turns from the bottom. But the entire activity of, you know, having a proper disciplined strategy with proper, you know, allocation to each stock and having a proper exit plan, that sort of keeps you well in place for any eventuality.
Mr. Anand, what are your views on this approach to the market as a value investor?
See, this is like, if I look at the top 10 names who are there in, who have made money over the last 150 years, or today's Soros, or today's Warren Buffett, or any of the big names who have made money. People don't make money by timing the market. People make money by staying invested, finding quality companies at prices. Liquidity in the markets will come and go. And interest, it's all basically at the, whether when the market turns, depends on the interest rate cycle. When is the last time in America you had an interest rate where the Fed rate is more than 4%? You have to go back to the late 90s. So from the late 90s till today, America has been in one big steroid injected thing. From the time Alan Greenspan did 2000 to save the market after the dot-com collapse. Then you had the housing collapse when they had to save the market again. And now they have saved it during the pandemic. Between 2008 and 2020, the maximum the Fed could raise the interest rate was 1%. So you are watching a gush of liquidity over 20 years. But in a lifetime of market of 500 years, you have to go back to the South Sea bubble and the Mississippi bubble and the Tulip bubble before that. The history of Mimias will tell you. All this has to end, and interest rate cycles will turn. We don't know when it will turn. But it should turn in the next 5 years. When the interest rates turns, equities will have a bad taste. And that is the time to accumulate for the equities. In America, the last big phase you could see is between 1969 and 1974, is the time when Buffett made most of his purchases. Then there was the period in 1987 when there was a major crash. In 2002, there was a major crash again. At that time, many people wrote obituaries for Mr. Buffett in 2002. The only difference between 2002, 2008 and today is that the pullback came much faster and more violently. Did not allow the people like Buffett to get in to buy. Whereas in 2008, there was sufficient time for like people like Buffett to get in and start buying, or people like me to make small purchases. The recovery in 2020 has been very quick, sharp, unexpected, and the amount of time it took to rebound, and has been rebounding ever since. So we didn't get in quickly enough, we didn't get enough time. But like 2000 and 2008 has shown, you will get times when you can deploy your cash. But markets has pockets of values, which you can keep small accumulations going on even today.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Alok, what would you talk about, like, say about the view that the fundamentalists usually win out in the long run?
No, so there's nothing wrong in the fundamental view. The only question is that, you know, Warren Buffett is quoted so many times, but how many people can act like Warren Buffett? That is the main question. You know, and all the top great 10 investors, you can't really emulate those qualities. I mean, they were special people and not everybody is like them. So you know, your own behavior in the markets is going to determine what kind of returns you will be able to get, how fearful you are when the markets drop, how greedy you get when the markets gain. So, you know, while they had a great run and, you know, they are phenomenal investors, the question is can you repeat it? And of the millions of investors, you know, if we can count only 10 who have done so great, I don't know if you and me can actually be there. So we need to find more you know, common man strategies so that you can live your life peacefully and also have healthy returns on your money, and not really, you know, just rely on hope that, you know, the long term will have impact you positively, because in the long term we are all dead anyways. So the kind of you know, the view that the new generation has Very few people are willing to wait, 25, 30 years to get those gains. And if Japan is the example, then if the generation that started from earning and deploying money from 1990, they have not seen any gain so far. I mean, how many would survive in that kind of environment? And that can happen anywhere. It was Japan in that area. It can happen to any country. So by just investing in great names and quality and in great fundamentals, that did not ensure to the Japanese investors that they would survive in the next 20 years. And those who could not wait for the 20 or 30 years that have gone by, I mean, they basically have probably never ever looked back at investing as a option. So what we have seen through our investors and our experience with how usually retail client behave is that unless you have a structure in place, unless you have a strategy in place, the behavioral issues that people have about how to deploy money, how to allocate money, how to do asset allocation, how to take advantage of market dips or take advantage of market height. I mean, that all requires a lot of hand-holding and strategizing, which individuals are usually not able to do until they reach a very later stage in life when they learn these lessons themselves. And by then, they've lost a lot of time that is needed for compounding. So, there are very few lucky guys who can really say, that I started investing 20 years back and now I'm sitting with, these multi-baggers. That's great for them. But that's not the average investor's journey, so as to say.
Okay, so at this point, can you offer a short summary of your approach to the markets? Your philosophy to the markets, basically.
The philosophy to the market is very, very clear that we will not predict where the market is going. We will allow the market to tell us what to do. We will follow the models that have been successfully tested over 20s of years of data and been successfully running since 2012. And we will basically follow the markets and allow the markets to tell us what to do next. So the sectors that are running faster will tell us that, we need to invest there. And once they slow down and hand over the baton to another sector or they all go to cash, we will follow accordingly. And we've seen that this approach beats the benchmark very beautifully.
Mr. Anand, if you have some response to that, or I'll go to the next question for you.
Anand, I have 2-3 points to make on this. Since you brought up Japan and how people have not made in Japan, let me quote a Warren story. About 1.5 years back, Warren decided to buy in Japan. So what he did is he went to the bank and took a loan for maybe about 10 or 15 billion. I don't know the numbers, it's $7 billion. And he took it at a no-recourse rate of 0% to 0.17%, payable over 25 years. And I don't think Warren would live for 25 years. And what he did is, he went to the what was called as Zygustus, that is Mitsubishi, there are 5 companies like that. These manufacture everything from thing to things. So he went to 5 such companies who had dividend yield of more than 5% at that time. And he just bought it. He uses the dividend to pay off the loans. And he has got 5% in the 4 Japanese conglomerates free of cost. That is value investing. So basically you get money free. You take it and put it into a company whose dividend will pay off the loan with no interest. And then you can relax. This is the way it should be done. I agree it is very difficult. It takes enormous patience. Because the human mind has been wired over millions of years. When you see danger, you do the fight and flight response. It's very difficult for a human being to be quiet. In the markets, you see the market do these kind of gyrations. But there lies the skill. In the terms of people who understand it in India, you can bat like Gavaskar or you can bat like a 20-20 batsman. Unfortunately, today's generation has not seen Gavaskar bat. I'm reminded of a test match when Gavaskar batted for 8 hours and 7 minutes to score 220 runs. If we had those skills, we wouldn't have lost this test championships in New Zealand. Sadly, this generation does not have that talent. But that is the kind of talent that is required to survive in this market. If people cannot do this, then what is the alternate that people like me have suggested, Warren suggests, Munger suggests, is go to the index fund, buy it for the long term. You will get it for 5 paisa per every 100 rupees. Forget it. Don't pay broker fees. Don't pay advisor fees. Just keep buying the index over the next 30, 40 years. Go to sleep. Put in 50%, 60% of your money into index. The balance 40%, you can buy bonds and go to sleep. And the index will take care of it. So there is no tension at all to worry. You don't have to follow the markets. You don't have to come on the market at all. This is what we suggest for those who do not know when to come and when to go. So only when you see the market, you have to see whether it's falling or going up. If you have just bought the index and gone away, there is nothing to worry about.
Prashant, can I come in?
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, I actually have a question, but you can.
So interestingly, if you look at the index, the index itself is a momentum portfolio.
Yeah, that was actually my question.
So every 6 months, you know, the index committee will sit around and throw out the laggards from the index and bring in the, you know, the guys who are running. And it's actually a beautiful momentum index. So, you know, you can buy index ETFs or index funds at a low cost and actually run a momentum strategy. And that can be the base momentum strategy. And you can, you know, take premium products and run premium momentum strategy. So, but my short point here is that if the index itself is like a momentum strategy, then that kind of, you know, really validates, you know, what momentum strategies do.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a common point, a common recommendation that both of you would make, right?
Can I come in?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
The index in India is a very shallow index. We are talking about Nifty 50. Here, I am talking about the S&P 500 or such a broad index. Unfortunately, we don't have mutual funds which follow the BSE 500 in a big manner in India. So the index funds that Buffett Charger talks about are the top 500 companies in America. So you can buy the top 500 companies in the American economy and go to sleep. But in India, unfortunately, the best you can do is buy the Nifty and buy the next Nifty. But even that covers 95% of the economy. So you are getting 95% of the economy. If you buy the Nifty and the Nifty next. It is not Buffett's suggestion that you buy the Dow Jones index and you go to sleep. You buy the S&P 500. In my case, I don't advise. I'm not a big investment advisor. I just invest for myself. But what I do, I tell people when they ask me, I don't recommend stocks. You buy the Nifty 50 and buy the Nifty 100. So the top 100 companies in India, you have an exposure. When the if you get an index for the Nifty 500, you buy the Nifty 500 and go to sleep. That's all about Texas. India is an extremely shallow market where, like I pointed out, if these five companies had you won, you would have beaten the index. But it's very difficult to say. Nobody could have said Tata Steel would have gone to 1,100 1 year back. So, if you had bought the Nifty and the Nifty next, you would have bought Tata Steel. So, there is the thing is, in our strategy, the difference between momentum investing and Nifty strategy is, we keep buying the Nifty when you go down the drain. The momentum says you wait. We don't wait. We keep buying down the train. Let me give you a big example to disprove this momentum strategy. In 2008, Buffett offered a bet to all these investment advisors. It's called the long bet 301. In 2008, at the bottom of the market, he said, I will prompt $1 million and ask anybody to say, next 10 years, you can beat the index. A group of mutual hedge fund managers agreed. Each of them put $1 million on the table. And Buffett chose the Vanguard S&P 500 fund to put his $1 million. The hedge fund managers chose a basket of hedge funds which they thought following momentum strategy will beat the index. Lo and behold, after 10 years, Buffett outperformed them by 25%. So, whatever you may call me, out of what a very famous saying in America today, you have to find 10 or 20 mutual funds which beat the index regularly. It's very difficult to find. And these funds don't beat them consistently. So you are better off to trying to find which investor, which analyst is good, which investment advisor is great, is like looking for a needle in a haystack. So instead of searching for a needle in a haystack, you might as well buy the index. Very simple. This is for the novice retailer.
Yeah, it's talking about the talking about the bet that Warren Buffett actually made. Bunch of active hedge funds, the bunch actually include momentum hedge funds as well?
Yeah, of course they did. No? They bought a bunch of it. Hedge fund investing is momentum. You take, I put 20 rupees on my equity, borrow 80 rupees and put 100 rupees in the market. That is the ultimate momentum and leverage. No? I magnify my profit by 5 times. And they didn't take one hedge fund guy. They took 5 guys. They took a basket of 5 hedge funds. Soros is the greatest of those guys who gets in and gets out of the market. Those are the kind of guys they picked up. Because Buffett was very confident. The fees of 2% will make the difference. What makes a difference between following a Nifty strategy and a momentum strategy is, I have to pay a 2% fee to the manager. Whereas in Nifty, I have to pay only 0.05% to the manager. So when I pay my fee difference, of 1.95 rupees for every 100 rupees makes a big difference over a period of 10 years. The longer the distance, the longer the gap. So why pay fees if I'm going to buy the Nifty? That is the logic Buffett gave.
Okay.
And he wrote it out in a big piece.
You have a response to that already?
So for the my sort of first response is that the S&P 500 is also of the same structure. It is rebalanced 4 times in a year instead of 2 times on Nifty. And in the last decade, there are 200 companies that have gone out of S&P 500 and 200 companies have come in. So it is a beautiful momentum portfolio, the S&P 500 also. Additionally, there are tons of research, you know, PhD academic studies done on, you know, the momentum factor versus, you know, the value factor or the growth factor or the quality factor. And over 200 years of data, they have found that, you know, the momentum has beaten all these factors. Yes, some individuals have individually done very well, you know, but that does not really, you know, count as, you know, as that value investing can really beat momentum investing, because momentum investing has been empirically and statistically proven to be, you know, a superior way of transacting in stocks. So that's what my view on this is.
Prashant, the proof of the pudding is, right? The proof of the pudding is eating. So what I'm trying to say, you look at all these things, you total up the money made by the value investors, as I'm saying, you total up the money made on the momentum investors, you will find after fees, I qualify after fees, the momentum investors would have returned far less than the index. This is a study shown. This is a 2% fee, but then there is a 20% profit sharing. So it is not possible for an ordinary retail investor to sit in front of the screen. So you have to pay a 2% fee to a professional who is sitting in the computer. That fee makes the difference is the logic, and Buffett is open to a bet anytime. So somebody can go up to say it is $1 million, he will put up $1 million and his estate will honor the bet, I'm sure. Because this is proven scientifically that there has been no possible way over a period of time that any hedge fund or momentum investing can, after fees, can beat the index. Buffett is ready for a bet, so I'm not going to bet against Buffett. But nobody seems to want to, after losing one time badly, none of the great momentum investment strategists have gone up against Buffett even till today. The bet ended in 2018. We are now 3 years down the line. Nobody has taken a bet against him even today.
Got it. I think the guests certainly agree to disagree. We'll move on to the next question. This is just to close it off. We'll talk with Mr. Anand. Start with Mr. Anand. Like, how do you see the markets going forward?
See, I see this bubble continuing to float till the time I get a clear scenario on two things. How is the inflation going to pan out over the next 12 months? Okay? And what are the inflationary expectations? Because inflationary expectations will decide when the Fed will be forced to correct. The recession of the 1970s, they left it to Jimmy Carter, lost his election
because he left it too late to bring in Paul Volcker and increase interest rates in 1976. So whether Mr. Biden allows this inflation to run and take it to a point where it becomes 7 or 8% and then he is forced to bring it down, then the Fed will be forced to apply the brakes very quickly. If the inflation is transiently and peters out, this momentum will continue for a year or two. So it all depends on the inflation trajectory. I'll be watching the inflation trajectory in America and Europe, and more than the inflation, the inflationary expectations in those two places.
All right. I love the same question to you. I'm not sure if it's it suits you, but yeah. How do you see it going forward?
I agree with Mr. Anand that the inflation boogie is upon us, and I don't foresee that inflation will just die out. And I think there's going to be an inflation scare for some time to come. More than the inflation, I think the real interest rates also need to be watched. Because minor, nominal interest rate increases may also get absorbed in the market. But what we need to watch are the real interest rates. And that should remain, I think, in the zero or negative territory, at least for the Western world. So I think there is difficulty in changing course from the current path, definitely by the current, Fed chief. And it'll take some external event probably for this path to change. So from that perspective, it does seem like the current trend is on par for course. But yes, one should definitely remain cautious and not jump in with lots of lump sum kind of investing here. Go slow by slow, slip sip by sip, and see how it goes, and have your exit plans ready, basically.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. That was a great discussion, particularly the value versus momentum discussion. Yeah. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Prashant. Thank you, Anandji.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, all of you.